Today, provide you with in-depth news and expert analysis, tell you the whole story and the bigger picture. Bring you the news you want to know only on Today.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un visits China. Radar expert and defense engineer receive China's top scientific award. Companies at this year's Consumer Electronics Show are showcasing their 5G products. And French government considering new law to tighten sanctions against undeclared protests. You're listening to Today, a news program with a different perspective. I am Sui. Coming up, we have an hour of world news and analysis. To hear this episode again or to catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching for World News Analysis. It's been confirmed that North Korean top leader Kim Jong-un is visiting China at the invitation of President Xi Jinping. The International Department of the Communist Party of China Central Committee says that Kim's ongoing visit lasts from Monday to Thursday. The detailed agenda of Kim's trip is yet to be released. The visit comes as Pyongyang and Washington are preparing for the second summit between Kim and Donald Trump. Meantime, South Korean authorities are welcoming the trip by Kim Jong-un. A spokesperson for the South Korean president says they hope Kim's visit to China will help contribute to the complete denuclearization of the peninsula. South Korea says it also hopes the interaction between Beijing and Pyongyang will pave the way for a second North Korea-U.S. summit. Now being with us to talk about this latest development surrounding the Korean Peninsula situation is Kim Chang Kim, professor of law at Korea University. So Professor Kim, first of all, how do you see the timing of the North Korean leader's visit to Beijing? What could be on the agenda?
I think it is fair to expect that the U.S.-North Korea summit meeting is soon going to take place, given that Chairman Kim is seeing President Xi Jinping. Because previously, the North Korean leader went to meet the leader of China before the U.S.-North Korea summit meeting was taking place. And I think that's what is going to happen.
So talking about China, what role has China been playing so far to solve the situation on the peninsula?
I think China has played a crucially important role in maintaining a balance between the United States and South Korean side on the one hand, and North Korea and China side on the other hand. I'm not suggesting that there is this clearly defined, sharply defined alliance between these two respective sides, but it is clear that North Korea would like to play some kind of balancing act between U.S. and China, and thereby maintain some kind of a better equilibrium, so in order to achieve perhaps more reasonable outcome. So in that sense, I think China has played a very important role to maintain some kind of balance.
What more can we expect from China and Russia? For example, we are seeing the dual suspension proposal, which is being promoted by these two countries, has been pretty much realized.
Well, it's true that so far the United States have insisted on a very one-sided demand, the so-called CVID. That kind of demand, the complete, verifiable, irreversible dismantlement of North Korean nuclear arms, that demand of the United States, in my view, has been a very one-sided and very unreasonable demand. Now, the role of China and Russia has been to tell the rest of the world that the U.S. demand is just unrealistic and it's too skewed in favor of one party at the expense of another party. That's not how diplomacy works, okay? The demand, U.S. demand of CVID has so far been an alibi, an excuse for not pursuing any solution, whether it's diplomatic or military, no solution whatsoever. So that is a very unfortunate situation. The role of China and Russia has been to persuade the rest of the world that the U.S. demand is not going to work, and it would be much better and much more reasonable to approach the problem from a more equitable and more reasonable point of view. And I think that has what Russia and China have played so far.
You mentioned Chairman Kim's visit to Beijing raised the speculation that there will be another summit meeting between Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump. Are you optimistic their second summit will make this momentum continue and achieve more results?
I think with U.S. President Donald Trump, it would be somewhat difficult to be optimistic about anything. But compared to the situation up until 2017, yes, there have been a number of remarkable achievements during the 2018, and I think we do stand a fair chance that a little bit more progress can be made in this year, but a lot will depend on the U.S. domestic politics, and a lot will also depend on the investigation against Donald Trump. So the uncertainty or the element of unpredictability really resides in the U.S. side rather than the side of North Korea. But having said that, I think it's much better that these two leaders meet as often as possible. So in that sense, yes, I am cautiously optimistic.
Mm-hmm. So could you also elaborate more about the domestic factor of the United States on the future talks? Like, how much support does President Trump have back home when it comes to reconcile relations with North Korea?
I think traditionally, so far over the past 30, 40 years, neither side of the U.S. domestic politics, that is the Democrats or Republicans, neither of them were really enthusiastic about genuinely resolving the North Korean situation. The Republicans have traditionally been a little bit more kind of militaristic, what people would say hawkish. But I think Democrats were equally unwilling, or they didn't really feel the need to do anything about North Korean situation. So the domestic U.S. politics, the way I see it, is that the Democrats are so keen to oppose whatever President Trump proposes to do. Look at what happens at Syria. You know, President Trump announced that he wants to withdraw troops, and that's what Democrats have all along been argued. But now that Trump is saying that, Democrats are opposing it. Same thing I think is happening regarding North Korean situation. So there is a great deal of opposition within the U.S. domestic politics. But it seems that Donald Trump might bring into a very different perspective. So we do have some precarious prospect whether Trump's new approach can indeed succeed. But I think it's much better that something new is at least being tried.
Now, from the perspective of North Korea, the North Korean leader says in his New Year message that North Korea could take a different path if nothing changed regarding the sanction and also the pressure from the United States. But at this stage, what choices does North Korea have?
I think Chairman Kim deliberately left it wide open. So he suggested that a new way or a new alternative might have to be attempted. So we can be sure that he was not talking about the old way, which would include testing the nuclear arms or threatening. There may be several possible avenues. Building closer relationship with China is obviously a possibility. or involving Russia more actively, and that could be another solution, or building even closer relationship with South Korea and inter-Korean cooperation, pursuing that. That could be yet another path. So far, it's just a very, very open-ended situation. And I think that's what Chairman Kim wants. He wants to leave it open-ended in order to have maximum room for maneuver.
Hmm. You mentioned the CVID approach of the current U.S. administration. So we know one major sticking point is denuclearization. My question is, can they manage to find more common grounds to denuclearize the peninsula, or it's still possible that we will go back, we could go back to square one or phase one because of the differences over denuclearization?
Yes, there has been a very great divergence of understanding about what is the ultimate goal. The U.S. has for decades been demanding complete dismantlement of North Korea's nuclear arms. So it's just one-sided demand, as if the U.S. does not have to do anything. U.S. position has been that it's only North Korea who has to get rid of North Korean nuclear arms. That's U.S. understanding of denuclearization. However, North Korea has always argued that U.S. has a lot of nuclear threats against North Korea, sometimes in the Korean Peninsula itself, but now clearly around the Korean Peninsula, but aimed at North Korea. So North Korea has been demanding that those U.S. nuclear threats against North Korea must also be removed. That's the North Korean understanding. So I think I, however, sense that United States administration, Trump administration, is in the process of changing the discourse, changing the terminology. They no longer say CVID. At some point, they talked about FFVD, full, final, verifiable dismantlement. But now they don't even say that. So the U.S. is gradually inching towards the North Korean demand. They started from CVID, which North Korea has never even considered. But now they abandoned CVID, it seems. And then they used to say talk about FFVD, but then they dropped that. And now they are talking about denuclearization. But I think it's a good sign that in the sense that two parties are approaching little by little. So I don't think the possibility of going back to square one is that great. If I had to, you know, bet, perhaps I would bet a little bit more progress rather than going back to square one.
Thank you very much, Professor Kim, for your time this evening. We've been talking with Kim Chong Kim, professor of law at Korea University, talking about the latest developments surrounding the situation on the Korean Peninsula. Still to come, radar expert and defense engineer receive China's top scientific award. You're listening to Today. Stay tuned.
What matters to China increasingly matters to the world. Keep up to date with the latest news and events about the Middle Kingdom with the China Plus app. Up-to-the-minute reports, live streaming audio, insightful opinion on everything China-related, facts, figures, and language learning resources at your fingertips. Everything in focus, all in one place. Search for China Plus in the App Store or Google Play.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. President Xi Jinping has presented China's top science award to two intellectuals for their contributions to scientific and technological innovation. Radar expert Liu Yongtan is being honored for his work in array signal processing and faint signal detection. His latest research helped improve the accuracy of radar-detected signals and target detection. Defense engineer Qian Qihu is being lauded for his contributions to China's underground protective infrastructure. A total of 278 projects and 7 scientific experts won awards this year. The annual ceremony in Beijing is designed to honor distinguished scientists, engineers, and research achievements. So far, 31 Chinese scientists have been granted this honor. Let's hear more from Yang Yuguang, professor from China Aerospace Science and Industry Corporation. Professor Yang, let's first look at the achievements of the two top scientists. We understand a key point of radar technology is accuracy. So what's been done by academician Liu Yongtan and his team to improve accuracy? What major breakthroughs he made that won him this top award?
Well, we all know that radar technology is very important for a country, especially for the security of a country. Radar technology has developed since the era of the Second World War, first used in the military zone. Now it is also widely applied in national economy and also other areas. As you mentioned, the accuracy is very important for the radar. The problem is that in some circumstances, the disturbance is very great. How to get the, what we call the real value, or the what we want from a very strong noisy background is a key problem. So the achievements of the academician is that he can get the very high quality images from the very noisy background, either the background from the sounds or other disturbance. You see that his achievements has been very well applied in the radar system near the seashore and monitoring the objects in the sea, and especially for the moving objects. So that is very useful, and for this very difficult problem, the reducing the noise is the most important part. And for his achievements, also he raised a new mechanism called the inverse synthetic aperture radar. We can see synthetic aperture radar everywhere, but this inverse synthetic aperture radar is not well developed. So his achievements in this field has bring us a new hope in the applications of the radar system.
So academician Qian Qihu at the same time was honored for his outstanding contributions in the field of protection engineering, which has been compared with an underground Great Wall. Could you elaborate on the science behind his projects? What makes these designs unbreakable?
He has made the underground Great Wall, which means that for a country, because the nuclear weapon or the nuclear forces is very critical for the safe of a country, to make it unbreakable, we should have a very strong protection of this kind of nuclear weapons. So it must can afford the attack of other nuclear weapons. So to make it more strong, we have to build some protection facilities. Especially critical is the wall and the door. So these kind of walls and doors are very difficult to be built, and we should test whether it can be effective. The achievements of the commission is not only on building itself, but also in developing the corresponding method, including the numerical calculation, numerical simulation, experimental method, and also the transplanting of his this technology to other applying field.
Another winner this year drew a lot of attention. Academician Xue Qiqun and his team was awarded for their research in quantum anomalous Hall effect, something I never heard of, though we know quantum physics is very much cutting edge these days. Could you tell us a little bit about their research? What is quantum anomalous Hall effect? What are the breakthroughs here?
Well, it's a really a professional question for describing the accurate definition of this effect. But I can say that this kind of quantum phenomenon and quantum science is developing very fast. You may notice that in recent years, we also have some reports on the quantum communication or the distribution of quantum security key or encryption. So this kind of technology can bring us very new measures for solving the problems in either scientific research or engineering. The quantum technology starts very early, but in recent years, we have, with the development of basic science and basic technology, we have many new applications, as I mentioned, the encryption applications. But in the future, I believe that the most important field for the quantum technology is the quantum computer, because you know that we have received a ceiling for the development of the computers, the computational speed and capability and capacity capacity of computers has not developing so fast like 20 years before. So in the future, maybe many scientists believe that the quantum technology is the only way to have some very significant breakthrough in the computing. So, and also the quantum technology in have other important applications in communication and other fields.
Academician Xu says China still lags behind when it comes to basic research and original innovative power. And Premier Li Keqiang today also said at the ceremony that China would put more emphasis on basic research. So how much gap is there between China and scientific powerhouses in the world? What's still needed to encourage the basic research?
When talking this topic, we should notice that we still are China is still a developing country. In the years before, because the most important thing for us is to strengthen our economy. So the applied science and engineering comes first. So that is one of the reasons that our basic science and other basic field are behind other developed countries. But with the booming of our economy, so it is the right moment for us to enhance the basic science and the basic arts and other basic technology. This is very critical for a country, especially for a big country. So in the future, I believe the nation will have more investments for this field. And the more important is that the policy encourage the young people, young professionals to be engaged in this field.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned more policies to encourage young scientists and engineers in this field. Premier Li today is also calling for more policies to spur the creativity from these young scientists. So what's been done by the Chinese government in this realm, and what's your suggestion that can be done better?
The leaders of China has mentioned many times that innovation or creativity and outreach are the two wings of scientific research. So you can see how important the innovation is. I believe that this time the prizes for the national prize for the science and technology is one of the measures of policy support to encourage this kind of innovation. And also we should to get a better development of the innovation. We should notice that we should not pay more attention too much attention on the direct returns of these kind of scientific research fruits. So because you know that for the basic science, there are in most cases they do not have a very direct return to the economy. So this kind of research should be encouraged. But sooner or later, this kind of scientific research can have the result benefit the whole world.
One last question. Premier Li today also says enterprises or the private sector should play a key role in innovation. So how important is research and development of Chinese enterprises to the general economy, and what kind of holistic approach is needed here?
I think this is very important. You see that with the development of our economy, the private companies and other companies, not professional research institutes, are playing more important role in the national economy. And of course, the promotion and the increase of our economy greatly based on the scientific promotions and progress. So you see that the emotions and research is also very important for these kind of enterprises, either as a state-owned or the private companies. So in the future, if we want to have a better development of these kind of enterprises, it should fund more invest more on the field of research, including basic research. You can see many success examples in other countries. I believe you can see more in China in the future.
Professor Yang Yuguang from China Aerospace Science and Industry Corporation. Other top stories we've been following. Chinese authorities have clarified the motivation behind the latest trade negotiations with the U.S., saying trade frictions are detrimental to both sides. U.S. President Donald Trump has suggested the major reason for China's willingness to end the trade dispute is due to a weaker economic performance. A U.S. delegation led by Deputy Trade Representative Jeffrey Gerrish is visiting China through Tuesday. The two sides are discussing how to implement the consensus reached by President Xi Jinping and President Donald Trump during their meeting in Argentina last month. Also, Tesla has broken ground on its Shanghai factory. Tesla is the first to benefit from a new policy allowing foreign car makers to set up wholly owned subsidiaries in China. The new plant, Tesla's first outside the U.S., is located in the Lingang area, a high-end manufacturing park in the southeast of Shanghai. It's expected to eventually pump out 500,000 electric vehicles per year once it opens. Let's take a short break here. Coming up, companies at this year's Consumer Electronics Shows are showcasing their 5G products. Also, French government considering new law to tighten sanctions against undeclared protests. To hear this episode again or to catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching for World News Analysis. I'm Sui, stay with us. You're listening to Today, I'm Sui. Time for our daily global survey, where we take a look at what's happening around the world. Join me in the studio is my colleague Patrick Flannery.
Tonight we begin in Asia, where Malaysia will choose its new king later this month to replace the country's first leader to ever resign. India's Supreme Court says U.S. seedmaker Monsanto is allowed to patent genetically modified cotton seeds.
In Oceania, 2018 was New Zealand's second hottest year ever, according to National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research. Thousands in Australia are recovering from jellyfish stings after an influx forced many beaches to close this weekend.
In Africa, Nigerian soldiers raided a newsroom following an article that criticized Boko Haram. Mozambique indicted 18 people for fraud involving $2 billion in loans to state-owned banks.
Turning to the Middle East, the UN Refugee Agency is investigating the 18-year-old Saudi woman who sought amnesty in Thailand, who claimed she feared her family would kill her. Iran has detained a U.S. Navy veteran since July on unspecified charges, according to the New York Times.
In Europe, Poland shuts down 13 escape room entertainment sites after a fire killed five teenage girls over the weekend. Thousands march in Belgrade to protest Serbia's president and recent attacks on journalists.
Looking to Latin America, Mexico's new president says cracking down on fuel theft is a positive step despite long lines at gas stations. Peru's attorney general resigns after interfering with a corruption probe involving a Brazilian builder.
Finally, tonight in North America, a federal appeals court says a politician violated the Constitution when she blocked a critic on Facebook. And President Donald Trump will address the nation in a primetime address focused on the border with Mexico and the ongoing government shutdown.
Thanks, Patrick. That winds up today's global survey. This year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, U.S. is getting underway, with thousands of companies showcasing their products and platforms at the annual tech show. Chi Huiguang has the story.
The highlights of this year's event are likely to include 5G, the Internet of Things, and automotive technology. An update to wireless communications networks, 5G, or fifth-generation technology, promises faster download speeds, lower latency, and more stability compared to the existing 4G networks. Michael Villanueva is the editor of Gadget, a technology news website.
CES 2019 comes at a very important time, right before 5G is really going to roll out around the world. So here at the show, I expect to see a lot of technology that really talks about what 5G means, hardware that kind of supports this new technology, and maybe, finally, IoT might become a thing.
5G mobile phones are set to start hitting the market later this year, with cities around the world already trialing 5G networks. While it's likely to take a number of years to get 5G infrastructure spread out across countries, once operational, the high-speed network will allow for all your gadgets, home appliances, and even vehicles to be connected to the Internet at all times.
5G is about connectivity everywhere, connectivity that is reliable, and IoT is all about devices that are always connected and that can talk to each other. So when you have the infrastructure that supports it, the technology can finally follow.
CES in 2018 saw voice assistants such as the Amazon Alexa or the Google Assistant take center stage. Since then, companies have added voice assistants to a wide range of products, including fridges, ovens, and even toilets. Nicole Scott is editor of Mobile Geeks, another technology news website.
The battle for voice assistants is going to carry on at CES 2019, but this year I think that we're going to start to see the car become one of the spaces that voice is going to try to reclaim. So Alexa is going to move into the car, and the automotive manufacturers are finally starting to come up with something that's sort of useful, but I think that, you know, the people who are making voice assistants for your phones have a massive head start.
Car manufacturers are also using this year's CES to launch some of their new vehicles. BMW is set to release its fully electric iNEXT at the show. Nicole Scott says companies like Honda and Hyundai will also be showing off their latest vehicles.
CES is really turning into a car technology show because it's so difficult for automotive brands to have their tech stand out when they're showing off a car at an event that's geared towards petrol heads and people that just care about how beautiful a car is and how much horsepower it is. So a tech show is really about automotive brands saying, hey, we are tech companies, we do have technology. You don't need to turn to Google or Alexa to, you know, fill the space inside your car. We have it too.
This year's Consumer Electronics Show runs from January the 8th to 11th. Over 180,000 visitors are expected to attend the world's largest tech conference.
That was our reporter Chihui Guang. For more about the new trends in the tech world, Zhao Yang earlier talked with Liu Baocheng, professor with UIBE, and Einar Tangen, author and columnist.
First of all, Aina, what's your impression of this year's CES? Quite fancy tech things, 5G, the Internet of Things, and automotive technology. But how would you think all this can change our lives?
Well, it can certainly change your life. The question is it going to put you out of a job and make you find another one? Because, you know, we talk about, we've talked about before, this idea of driverless cars could have a profound effect. We've talked about, you know, the nature of things to come, whether population is needed more or less. And this technology could be literally a game changer. It could be as profound as the Industrial Revolution in terms of moving people from one kind of job to another, from completing the rural to urban migration, especially in places like China, where it hasn't happened as much as yet, in India, where it's still in the process. But, I mean, the thing that really strikes me here is that the undercurrents that are going on here, there's so much hype going on, but the reality is a little bit frightening because you have this tech war going on between the U.S., which sees China as a threat. But the fact is China has been working very hard, Huawei, ZTE. If you look at all the metrics of what they put into creating 5G, they're really far and above one of the world leaders. American firms, on the other hand, are really lagging behind.
So, Baocheng, what do you make of the current competition between China and the U.S. in the realm of 5G?
Well, China was very good at using all the applications that was invented in the United States, particularly in the retail sector. Right now, China is heading not only to expand its application, but rather leapfrog innovation in the 5G. So that's why it caused quite a level of anxiety in the West. But the challenge lies, number one, is that our industry is ready, and also will the regulatory environment be able to quickly accommodate the use, because it is not only the hyperspeed of connectivity that really works, but it's a big change in the job market, is big change in the design of a governance.
Aina, so 5G, the high-speed network, will allow for all your gadgets, the home appliances, and even vehicles to be connected to the internet at all times. So how will this change our lives?
Well, you have to remember, being connected to the internet is, you know, getting a movie faster or, you know, surfing the net faster isn't really going to change your life that much. But when you start combining this ability to get information from one place to another very quickly in large amounts, and you start talking about all the sensors are out there, remember, there's a vast amount of information that's being collected every day. Now, if that's being able to be modeled in real time, by modeled, I mean it's being sent somewhere where there's an artificial intelligence setup, which is crunching the numbers, it can be very, very efficient in predicting what is needed. For instance, cities will run better. Farms will not need as much water and fertilizer and things like that. There'll be higher yield. The world crop production, for example, could be regulated instead of everyone guessing and hoping that, you know, they do better than somewhere else based on predictive patterns. They could say, look, we'll plan for a 10% plus or minus, but that will, in essence, control the price of food much better, keep it lower, and, you know, prevent a lot of farmers from going out of business, answer national needs. I mean, there are so many areas where sensors combined with the ability to use artificial intelligence and transmitting that information across the 5G, that's the real promise that we're talking about here.
And so, Aina, so CES in 2018 saw the voice assistance, but what applications or advancement has been made since then? How different is this year's CES from the last year?
Well, I think the big thing is the car is showing up. Every car automotive company in the world has decided that they're now a technology company and that they need to show themselves over there. Ironically, there's, you know, people like Tesla and others who are started out on the technology side who are going over to the automotive industry to show what they can do. I mean, there's 100 million Alexa products been sold that are in place. It has a huge market. I'm not so certain that this is what people think it is. I mean, in terms of collecting information, if it's listening to what you say or being able to download keywords and things that you do and you start communicating more, yes, it's very useful from that side. But I don't know necessarily that my life is going to change that dramatically if I say, call mom to Alexa as opposed to just tap it, you know, just hit my phone and go to my contacts and hit call mom. So it's really, you have to kind of separate what is going to be of actual value in terms of what will people pay for. And there's two things. One is convenience, and obviously if people like it, they'll pay for it. The other thing is efficiency, which pays for itself. For instance, in banking, we've talked about how you can have predictive analysis based on social factors, also financial factors, looking at a business plan, being able to judge it against a million other business plans and existing businesses in place, and then making the determination whether you want, it's a good idea to lend money to this person so that they can take their idea and make it into something. If you're able to do that very efficiently.
So, Bao-Chong, what about the automotive technology? How has it been faring so far? Do you agree with some guys saying the driverless car is, you know, a very good or big step forward for our society?
Well, definitely. The automatic driving with all the network designs that support it will bring revolutionary changes to the how people get connected, how people move around, and how goods are being moved around. Technology, as again, is, my attitude is that technology is one thing, but the user environment is a different one. For example, now the electronic ticketing is not really completely popularized, so that requires the determination of the regulators as how this can be governed. And then there are also high resistance among consumer usage and among those traffic controllers who wanted to keep their employment level, who are resistant to change in their knowledge in the operation, and also in phasing out the old-fashioned infrastructure, etc. So I would see it is still very far on the horizon, although industrialists estimate, okay, within 3 or 5 years, we are going to see all the changes on the horizon. I'm not that really optimistic.
Liu Baocheng, professor with the UIBE, and Einar Tangen, author and columnist, speaking with Zhao Yang. Coming up, French government is considering new law to tighten sanctions against undeclared protests. You're listening to Today. I'm Sui. We'll be back in a minute.
In-depth analysis, valuable insights, expert views, presented by an award-winning team. Today, keeping you well-informed, up-to-date, and ahead of the news.
You've been listening to Today. French Prime Minister Edouard Philippe has announced plans to punish people who hold unsanctioned protests following 7 weeks of anti-government unrest. Philippe says his government is working on legislation that will ban certain protesters and ban the wearing of masks at demonstrations. He said 80,000 security forces will confront the next wave of protesters who broke through the gates to a government office this weekend. Chaos erupted around Paris, where demonstrators fought riot police and set fire to cars and motorbikes. At least 6 people have died, while 1,400 others are injured. For more on the latest situation in France and also this so-called yellow vest protests, we're now joined on the line by Dr. Cui Hongjian, head of the European Studies Department with the China Institute of International Studies. So Dr. Cui, why is the French government planning to introduce this tougher law right now? How bad is the situation in France at the moment?
Well, also we know that so far it looks like so-called yellow vest movement is going to a worse situation. You know, after the new year, also we know this is already the eighth round of this movement. So far, maybe more than 5,000 people has been arrested by the government, and also 1,000 people have been put to trial. So I think now, yes, maybe it's a situation for government to keep the order. So as we know that the new law will try to decrease the violence of this movement and to help the society, the French society, to go back to the normal situation.
A left-wing leader, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, said those planned measures would mean that demonstrators can no longer demonstrate. So what's your take on his statement?
Yes, as we know that once there will be some new law from the government, especially those people who didn't get any permission from government and they go to a street for demonstration, will be punished by the government. Yes, there will be some, a shock to this movement, and which means that less and less people will be part of the movement. But on the other side, I don't agree with Mr. Mélenchon from the left-wing party in France that, as I know that the demonstration could be happening, but I think even in France, it will be in the law and it would be in the order. So we can find out to some degree some political forces in France is trying to take use of the movement to promote the visibility and the support in society.
And then could you remind us a little bit about the whole Yellow Vest movement? How did it start and what are the protests really about?
Yes, if we look back to the last November, we can find out the start of this movement. At the beginning, the major reason for this movement or original reason is some people in France, they are not satisfied with the new measures from the government to have some more diesel taxi. But of course, at the same time, I think that now it looks like the taxi is not a major reason, because now in the name of the yellow vest movement, more and more French people, they try to, express the companies, the unsatisfaction against the government, and also how about the personal life situation, everything. So now it looks like the movement has developed into a new situation, that kind of struggle between the government and the people.
So people argue Macron is perhaps the most anti-populist leader among the European countries. So do you think is this anti-populist leader actually reinforcing populism on the continent?
Yes, to some degree, I think that now the French politics in this dilemma situation is, major political commitment from President Macron and his party is to anti-populism. But now the question is, how could you deal with the populism? And if you try to have some tougher attitude and also maybe in a wrong time, I think that would be a very bad situation for France now. For France now is you will have to stimulate the populism itself. So I think now, yes, the question and issue for government is how could President Macron to help the average people in France to understand the real purpose of his reform, and how it is the benefits for average people from his reform. I think indeed, because as we know, French government will have maybe a great dialogue between the government and the people. I hope that this kind of action from government will be helpful to narrow down the gap between the government and also the expectation from the average people in France.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cui, as always. We've been talking with Dr. Cui Hongjian, head of the European Studies Department with the China Institute of International Studies. Let's take a short break here. Coming back for some lighter news stories we've been following. You're listening to Today. Stay with us.
ChinaPlus.CRI.CN is your home for everything you want to know about China.
The latest news in China and everything China-related from around the world.
Everything in focus, all in one place, bringing you vital information for your business and travel.
Chinese culture, language learning, and more.
ChinaPlus.CRI.CN.
ChinaPlus.CRI.CN, your portal into today's Middle Kingdom.
Welcome back. Join me for the other news segment is Patrick Flannery.
Sui, 3D printing is officially saving lives. We hear a lot about 3D printing, and more often, it's proving to be a critical role in medicine. The material is used to make prosthetics. We've heard about those. But recently in Bulgaria, a man received a first, a 3D printed rib implant. During an x-ray, doctors noticed a growth on his rib. It turned out to be a defect that had been there since birth. So right there on the spot, surgeons made a rib. They replicated the shape and thickness to make an identical substitute and save the man's life.
So what are the biggest advantages of 3D printed implants as compared to traditional materials surgeons have used for years?
Well, that 3D printed substance, it feels like plastic if you've ever touched it. It's not only a lot cheaper to make, it's also a lot more effective than the titanium that's typically used for these procedures. Doctors say that the material functions as an actual rib does, whereas the titanium just doesn't quite do the job. And they printed out the rib within about 24 hours at a cost of only $100.
Right. Also very cost effective.
Yeah.
It does seem the medical field is embracing 3D printing with more regularity.
Yeah, it does. And the Food and Drug Administration regulates medical treatment involving 3D printed implants. They've done this for about a year now. And the FDA has prepared for this wave of technology for medical patients. We've heard of knee replacements and cranial implants. Never before has a rib implant happened until about this week. So the government works with makers of 3D printed medical devices to comply with these evolving regulations.
So tell us about the patient who received this 3D print rib. How is he feeling now?
Well, he's 35. And again, this defect had been there since he was a baby. Doctors say he's now in perfect health. He went to the doctor with tonsillitis and left with this artificial rib. So surgeons are now already working on their next project. They say it's a model of three ribs and a sternum.
Very promising future for this new technology.
Indeed.
Let's move on to our second story.
Well, an attempted coup led by five soldiers in the West African country of Gabon has failed. Gabon borders the Atlantic Ocean, and the army officers stormed the state broadcasting station. They went on the air saying the military had seized control of the government. They claimed the purpose was to restore democracy, so people at home turned on their TV to see men holding guns and claiming they were in charge. And they took hostages, and in their speech, the soldiers criticized the president's ability to rule. Government security forces then killed two of the coup leaders.
So what proved this failed uprising against the government this time?
The resentment had been boiling for a long time. A little bit of history here. Ali Bongo has been in power for almost 10 years. He became president after his father died. His father had led the country for 42 years. But the man currently in power hasn't been in Gabon for months. Mm-hmm. He's in Morocco recovering from a stroke. And he barely had won his second election in 2016, and his opponents ever since have disputed the results. You know, some credit Bongo for modernizing the party and diversifying Gabon's economy. It's a former French colony and one of Africa's top oil producers. And his opponents point out his wild spending habits while most people in the country are in poverty. And now we're told he's also being investigated for embezzlement.
So apparently the five people have been arrested. What is the status of the attempted coup now?
The government says it's all under control. The soldiers who survived security resistance are now in jail. As for when Bongo returns, it's unclear, although media report that he's having a lot of difficulty walking and talking.
Right. So we do see this as kind of a phenomenon on the African continent. Some countries tend to see regular this kind of a coup or situation where military like activities from the opposition parties. It shows that probably their political system are not that mature. But at the same time, I think there is a much deeper a reason is because people are not living a well-satisfied life, so their economic situation is not so good.
Well, sure, there's a lot of resentment when you see the hypocrisy of someone who is spending lavishly, as this president has, especially on cars. That's his hobby. Mm-hmm. Bongo likes cars. When 60%, 70% of the people are barely at the poverty line, you get that resentment. And this week, the military decided to take action to its own hands. Unfortunately for everybody involved, a lot of people were killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you very much, Patrick. That's all the time we have for this edition of Today. A quick recap of today's headlines. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is now visiting China. He's now here in Beijing. Radar expert and defense engineer received China's top scientific award. Also, companies at this year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, the United States, are showcasing their 5G products. Also, the French government is considering new law to tighten sanctions against undeclared protests of those so-called Yellow Vest movement. If you want to listen to this episode again or catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching for World News Analysis. The program engineer of this episode is Yamin. You've been listening to Today. I'm Sui. Thank you very much for listening.